And hello, everyone out there in podcast land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast right here on NPR Illinois. I'm Jeremy Gechner, and I'm here to do a quick little intro for a very, very special episode that you're about to hear. Recently, we got the privilege of screening and interviewing the director of the Netflix film Wounds that was just released last week. And this is a great, great movie starring Armie Hammer, Dakota Johnson, Zazie Beetz, and a whole slew of other really talented actors. Hulu was gracious enough to give us access to interview the director and writer of the film, Baba Kanvari, and our own Phil Rockwell got to sit down on the phone with him and discuss this movie at length. It is a really wonderful interview that gives you some great insight into the film, which is playing with a lot of deep things, not just your run-of-the-mill typical horror film that you would think of. So this is what you're about to hear, our own, the Front Row's own Phil Rockwell, interviewing Wounds director Baba Kanvari right here on NPR Illinois, the Front Row Podcast. Happy listening, everyone.
I guess I want to ask you first, after watching the whole movie, what should I be more afraid of, a haunted cell phone or an adult male incapable of introspection?
That's a very good question. I guess both of them, but I'll go with the latter more because it's more real.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So your lead is played by Armie Hammer.
Sure, yeah.
Who I think if you created Tall, Dark, and Handsome in a lab, you'd probably end up with something similar to him.
That's so true, yeah. He's all of that, but he's also, in the real life, he's an incredible human being. Not only a talented actor, very, very genuinely good person.
Oh, that's fantastic. So one of the things that I thought was really cool about your film is you take your time setting up these expectations of Will. That first scene in the bar, this is a dude I would want to hang out with. You know, he's funny, he's charming, he's engaged with everybody in the bar, including people who other people might disregard, like Eric.
Yeah.
And then you proceed to sort of peel back that veneer. It's almost like it's exposure of the cool guy.
That's the wrong way to put it. Yeah, for sure. I think for us, not to speak for Armie, but our conversation about the character was exactly that. You know, this is a guy who's very affable, he's very charming. He's the guy, like you said, that when you go to that bar, you think, oh, that bartender is so cool. I want to be his friend. But he's also very shallow, and this mask of charm and friendliness is it is a mask. It's a facade. And, you know, he's basically skating on the surface of life, not taking anything seriously. And then when he comes across the cell phone, that kind of shakes up his world, and this mask of charm starts to slowly slide, and he exposes himself. So that was the arc. And I remember with Armie, we were always saying that, like, Will at the start of the film and Will at the end of the film, we need to see, they need to feel like two different Wills. And I think he did an incredible job mapping that arc as an actor.
Yeah, and the film just sort of generally, considering the distance you guys travel with his character, that was one of the things that I enjoyed, is you let it develop slowly and kind of sneakily, and it really wasn't until the final scene between him and Dakota Johnson's Carrie that it sort of hit that, oh, maybe this is what we should be afraid of. The biggest fright to me in the movie is when he gets up from the table after that conversation. So it wasn't sort of a supernatural thing. He became the sort of figure of fear in the film.
Exactly. Yeah, near the end, like being influenced by whatever it was influencing him. That's so true. And I also love the moment when, you know, he just almost goes and, like, sadistically looks at the hurt he caused, you know, from behind the wall. Like, he's at that point of the movie, he's in it. He's a different Will.
One of the things that was interesting to me, the most obvious and sort of literal wounds in the film, obviously you have Eric's wound on his face from when he was stabbed in the bar fight. And then obviously what we see develop with Will, it's all males. Whereas the women in the film tend to be certainly more together, and just sort of a calmer presence. Like, I don't think between Carrie, Alicia, and Rosie, they ever really raised their voice. And as the film went on, that dichotomy between the women in the film and the men becomes even more pronounced. Was that something you were looking at as well?
That's so bang on, Phil. Yeah, that's exactly what we were planning. I mean, if you think about it, almost all the male characters in the film get into a fight at some point. You know, I guess some in the middle of some sort of altercation. And that was done on purpose, you know, because for me, one of the main themes of the film is the descent of a man or men in general, especially in this time and era, you know, when there's like a lot of discussion about toxic masculinity and like that, you know, that sense of entitlement that some men have. And yeah, that was what we were trying to explore for sure, especially in Will's character. And it's, you know, I always like say that, like, if my first film Under the Shadow was about the ascent of this woman, you know, after going through certain obstacles, this film is about the descent of a man. So it's like a yin and yang in a way.
So the catalyst of this is Will discovers a phone with some disturbing material on it, sort of to put a bow on it.
Yeah.
Were you hoping to say something about technology too, and how sort of that can contribute to, you know, when there's a void in a human being, you know, you see people go online and things like, you know, the toxic masculinity, the white nationalism, those kind of things can seep in through technology. Was that something you were looking at as well?
Exactly. It's almost like a portal to another dimension. Look, I mean, like everyone else, I love technology, and it's pretty much a big part of my life these days. You can't live without it, but technology is like, I always say it's like almost like a tool, like a hammer. You can build stuff with a hammer. You can always also kill people with a hammer. That's the weird thing about technology. It can be used for good and you can be used for bad. And it's now allowing us, you know, in this internet age to have access to a lot of things, a lot of disturbing things, a lot of like disturbing information and toxicity that we didn't used to. And that's definitely one of the things I was trying to explore. And it was, you know, for me, it's also one of the interests is that, you know, the catalyst, the people doing it are these young college kids that, you know, they're always like hidden in the shadows and in the background, almost because, you know, in this day and age, a lot of chaos in the world is unleashed by this generation of trolls online, and like people go online and hide behind technology and you know, cause chaos and mayhem. And that was the thing that was also very interesting to us as we were telling the story.
So I mentioned Armie Hammer, but I did want to ask about Dakota Johnson and Zazie Beetz, who are, I mean, can you even call them up and coming now? I mean, Zazie has 6 movies coming out this year. I saw Dakota Johnson just recently in Suspiria. I mean, those two have really blown me away in the past couple of years. What were they like setting up the two sides of Will's sort of duplicitous life?
Yeah, they were incredible. They were such great collaborators. And I felt like with Dakota, I mean, obviously she's huge, you know, off the back of 50 Shades franchise, but she's incredibly smart. You know, when I met her, she was like, it was right after she finished 50 Shades, and she was, you know, she really wanted more and more challenging roles and like to push herself. And I was so honored that she went for this role and she said yes. And Zazie is the same. Zazie is such a lovely human being and such a talent. So as I was writing the script, I was watching Atlanta, and I'm a huge fan of Atlanta. And I went to the producer, and I kept saying, I see Zazie Beetz as Alicia. So I feel so lucky that I managed to get her for that role, because she was in my head from the get-go.
So Carrie's the only one that that really gets drawn into this sort of the mystery of the phone. How did you see her sort of exploration of it differently than Will's? Because obviously they have two very, very different reactions to it.
Well, for me, Will actually never does much exploring. He becomes a target because he's this, as you said, he's just susceptible to this sort of influence because he's so hollow and cracked and this dark force finds him. But with Carrie's opposite because, you know, she's a PhD student, she's a researcher already, and she just can't let go. She's the one who starts putting the pieces together because she realizes that, you know, she even says to Will, why are you so blasé about this? Once her curiosity is triggered, she needs to go down the rabbit hole and that starts affecting her. So that was the difference between the two of them. You know, one being very sort of eager and curious to piece this puzzle together, where the other one just wanted, you know, like being lazy about it and wanted. Will never, you know, Will is a type of character who doesn't really take responsibility about anything in life.
No.
He just kind of skates on the surface. You know, he's happy, he thinks he's content, he just lives in the minute and skates on the surface of life until this happens. So yeah, that was the difference between the two of them. I mean, obviously, Alicia and Carrie, like she said, they're supportive characters. I mean, the whole film is through Will's point of view, but
right.
Alicia, for me, was always like as very similar to Will, at least when the film starts. You know, she's not really taking life seriously in her late 20s, but what I like about her is that by the end of the film, she kind of realizes that she needs to do something. She ends up having more agency and takes control of her life, whereas Will never ends up doing. He's so gone and lost by the end of the film that he surrenders to this thing that he doesn't even understand just to give meaning to his life.
I love the very beginning. I'm forgetting the gentleman's name, the one that Alicia was dating. Says something.
Yeah, Jeffrey.
They see a cockroach and he says, well, you know, if you see one, it means there are 1,000 in the walls.
Yeah.
And that sort of sets up, you know, well, maybe he drinks a little too much, but that's just one thing. You know, it's not really that big a deal. But it's such a nice setup to the fact that we're going to reveal the other 1,000 issues that he's just sort of burying and neglecting. And then the breakfast scene, that when you mentioned how smart Dakota Johnson is, that really comes through in that scene, mm-hmm. just because she essentially has to take the piss out of the lead. She does it so well.
I know. I love that.
Precision. I'm going to watch the film again, but I've watched that scene 3 or 4 times. I absolutely just adore that scene.
Yeah, and she is so in control of that situation. That's what I like. And he starts getting pissed about it. That's one of my favorite scenes as well, because it also has a bit of sense of humor in it that, like you said, he starts it off, but she takes it. She's so measured about it, and she doesn't even break down in front of him. It's only when he's gone. But then he still, you know, like he still has to go and seize this emotional wound that he caused because he's, you know, at that stage. Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you dig it, man.
I especially liked how the wounds are almost a contagion. And by the end, we're just grateful that patient zero of Will, that all these other characters are almost able to get away from him. So his
exactly.
wounds don't contribute more to their own.
Exactly, yeah. And he's basically, there was something interesting you said about cockroaches as well. You know, how you said there's like, when you see one, there's thousands more in the walls, and, you know, that's basically where the film is going. And the cockroaches tend to also find dark holes and cracks to go and infest in and hide there. And I think the film, for me, that's why it's called Wounds as well, because it's obviously, like you said, there's more literal wounds, there's also emotional wounds. The film is always about wounds and cracks and holes that are within, and you always hide it from everyone else. But what if they start getting infested? What if, you know, something finds it and starts to seep in? You know, that was the exciting theme for us.
Yeah, I always appreciate when horror, because you have very striking horror elements in this. The changes to a gentleman's skull that I wasn't sure if I saw or not,
Amazing. Yeah.
Was an effect that I really dug, because you almost get put in Will's headspace where you think, am I really seeing this? Is it something that I just, it didn't look right? So for the horror stuff is really effective, but at the end of the day, I just kept thinking about Will and how he was sort of set up to be this vessel because he skated through life and didn't have much going on.
Yeah, he's a shell of a man ready to be filled in with whatever it is that can fill it in.
Well, before I let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you specifically about the cockroaches.
Yes.
How many were real? I mean, the last scene we can, I have an idea that was largely in effect, but I saw you give an interview where you said there were a lot of cockroaches in New Orleans where you shot. Were you dodging them as you were trying to use them in the film? What was it like having these mindless insects such a significant part of your film?
Well, it was gross and amazing at the same time. So we had a cockroach wrangler. I'm not joking with you. So we had a guy who came with it was hundreds of cockroaches in containers he used to come with. And we had someone from the animal control, the days we were shooting the cockroaches, someone had to come and monitor because we were not allowed to hurt, harm, or kill the cockroach on camera.
Right.
So to answer your question, the first question, it's basically, it's almost like 50-50, I would say like 60-40, a lot of the cockroaches in the film are real, except for some of the wider, more apocalyptic shots, if I can call it that. But even for some of the bigger shots, we had cockroaches. We have real cockroaches in the shot to use as reference for VFX to multiply them.
Right.
And the weird thing about that many, I learned so much. First of all, they stink. Especially when you have loads of them, they really stink. And they're weird, but the cockroach wrangler have all these clever tricks to make them do what we wanted them to do, but it required a lot of patience, obviously.
Sure.
And like I said, we were not allowed to harm a cockroach. And if one of the cockroaches has gone missing, we had to shut down the set, and the wrangler had to go everywhere and find it. So they used to count every single one. But then you come off the set in New Orleans, they're just everywhere on the street and at homes of bars, and people just stomp on them. It's nothing. But when we were shooting them, we had to be very careful.
Yeah, then you have responsibility. So, the very first one you see is on the bottles. Do you cast that cockroach? Do you say, oh, this one, the Wranglers say, this one will behave in a certain way, so this is probably the best one for the bottles?
Yeah, this was it was basically kind of like that. It was this one is well behaved, this one is more chubby and good looking, it will show on the camera. So they used to show me options, and I was let's go for that one. And they keep them cold, and that's why they they're kind of a bit slow, and then they do use tricks to trigger them to run around. And it's fascinating seeing the Wrangler work them. And it was seeing that Wrangler was something out of a horror film. You used to have them crawling all over him, some sort of what was that film? I think it was called Willard with rats. But Wrangler he used to do it with cockroaches, just have cockroaches crawling on his arms and everywhere. It was something out of a horror movie.
Well, it's effective. Did you have anybody on set who was I don't think I can handle being around these bugs? Did you have to ask that?
We had a few people who were a bit worried at the start, but you get used to them so fast when you're constantly around them. But one thing was that people trying to be brave and asking the Wrangler to put it, I did it once, and I said, put it on my hand. And then the texture is so weird. Take it off. But, they're harmless, but I think they're just really dirty and gross.
Yeah, well, I live in the Midwest, and we have spiders galore here that are harmless, but that doesn't keep my wife from screaming and running through the house when she sees one. So
Well, I really appreciate your time. I really, really enjoyed the movie. There's a lot going on there. I can't wait to watch it again.
Thank you so much, and I'm so glad you dug it and saw those the scenes and the Easter eggs. And I really appreciate it. I mean, when I set out to make it, I was hoping that it would be a film that hopefully people will rewatch. You know, it's very, very exciting that to hear that you got into it.
Oh yeah, super rich film, man. I will be I will be pushing it on anyone who matters to me. So I appreciate your time, brother, and good luck with this one.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.